Okay, so we're on Daf Lamed Zayin tonight. So I'll begin about 37a. I'll begin around 10 lines from the top. Where is Itmar? Okay, it's the second word in line, Itmar. So we spoke about yesterday that there's a prohibition against marrying a woman who's nursing a child until the child is 24 months old. And that in addition to which, if a person wants to marry a pregnant woman, he has to wait till she gives birth and then 24 months after. And then if he does go forward and marry her against halacha, then there are implications for that. So he has to divorce her, and according to one opinion, he can never remarry her. According to the other one, he has to just wait till the time period passes. So the Gemara brings a similar situation where we have a question: when a person violates halacha, are there repercussions for it? So Itmar, Kitcha B'toch Shlosha. So here we're talking about where a marriage was dissolved, either through the death or divorce. Nothing to do with Yibam per se. It's just, you know, Rachel's married to Reuben and Reuben divorces her or Reuben dies. And then the next suitor, I'm calling him Shimon, but it could be anybody, he and it's not his brother, so it's Zebulun is the next suitor. So he has to wait 3 months, but he didn't wait 3 months. So Kidsha B'toch Shlosha Ubarak. So he only did the Erusin after 3 months. He didn't do the Nisuin. So our major chashashes, we're afraid that she'll become pregnant. We won't know whose child it is. And that's our concern, because here the first marriage is definitely dissolved. It's either dead or divorced. And we're not talking about a Yibum situation. So our concern is we have to know what the yichus of the child is. So, but he didn't do nisuin, so there's no concern about that. So plea by Rabacha Barafram. So it's makloket between Rabacha and Rafram, Chadamar Bishamtinanle. One says, we put him in Cherem until he divorces this woman, because we don't want them to be married. They shouldn't be married within 3 months. We want this thing ended. B'chadamar eruke mistaye. He said, did I leave out the word of Barak? In other words, he fled. In other words, he fled the jurisdiction after he did the Erusin. One says his flight is sufficient. In other words, he's not around. The guy, you know, he was here. I guess, you know, we were living in Borough Park. he said, I'm going to get out of town because they're after me. So we're not afraid about it. So that's sufficient. So I have a uvda. It was actually an incident that occurred just with these fact patterns. But Amar Lahu Rafram, who a line or two ago said, we have to put him in Cherem. He said, Eruke Mistai. So Rafram apparently came around. He said his flight is sufficient and we don't need to do anything more with that. Okay? In other words, he did Erusin with her. And so now he leaves the jurisdiction, right? So she can't marry somebody else unless she gets a get, clearly. But he's not around. That's the main thing. Okay. Well, it is or is not? Well, it's a solution for us. Then now we know who the child is. And afterwards, if she wants to get a get, she's got to work something out with him. All right. Right, that's correct. Right, correct, correct. All right, so I'm moving on now. Okay, so now we're at the two dots. Safek ben teisha v'chulei. So if you remember, we said in the Mishnah that you have a Yavam and a Yavama, so they're supposed to wait 3 months. In other words, before doing Yibam, or Chalitza, I should wait 3 months. If Reuben and Shimon are two brothers, and Reuben was married to Rachel, and Reuben dies, Shimon should wait 3 months before he does Yibam or Chalitza with Rachel. But let's say Shimon should wait 3 months till he does Yibam or Chalitza with Rachel. Let's say Shimon and Rachel were very eager to go forward with Yibam, so they did Yibam before the 3 months. And then Rachel gave birth to a child. So the Gemara says it's Safek ben Tishla Rishon, Safek ben Shibalakman. Let's say they waited 2 months. So Rachel waited 2 months and Shimon waited 2 months, and then Shimon did Yibam with Rachel after 2 months. And then 7 months after doing Yibam, Rachel gives birth. So we don't know, is this a 9 month pregnancy and it's Reuven's child, which would be problematic for Shimon, because now Shimon has engaged in illicit relations with Rachel, or is this a 7 month pregnancy? So that works out better for Shimon. But either way, so the Mishnah says Yotzi, that we force Shimon to divorce the wife because we don't know which way it is, so we can't let them stick around. He's got to divorce her, and then we said will have lot kasher, but the offspring is definitely kasher. There's no question of mamzerus with the offspring. If the offspring is Reuven's son, that's fine. And if he's Shimon's son, it's fine. But okay, that's what the Mishnah says. Now, let's see back in the Gemara. So, Sabe Bentesha Bechulei. So, Amrli Rabbi Rav Nachman, Lema Alech HaRov Nashim, Rov Nashim Tisha Yalvin. You know, in Halacha, we say we follow the Rov, we follow the majority. So why don't we say, in this case, we'll follow the majority. Most women give birth after 9 months. So we don't know whether there's a 9-month child or a 7-month child. Why don't we say the Rov is 9, and we'll assume it's a 9-month child, and we'll proceed accordingly, and then we'll assume the child is from the first one, and presumably would assume that Shimon has got definitely his history with this marriage. So Amarle, so Rav Nachman says to Rava, Nashid Yidam Neshiva Yalvin. Women in our locality give birth after 7 months. So Amarle, so Rava says to him, Nashid Yidhu Abaruba Da Amma. So if the women in your locality give after 7 months, are they most of the world? Most of the world. So Amarle Haki coming. He says, no, this is what I meant to say. Rov Nashim Yalvin Letisha. Most women give birth after 9 months. Umiyat Leshiva. And a minority give birth after 7 months. Let's assume 90% of the women give birth after 9 months, and 10% after 7 months. Any woman who gives birth after 9 months, the ubar, the fetus, is discernible after 3 months. And Rashi brings out the pasuk in Chumash. It says by Tamar. It says on the tenth narrow line, but he can be shlosh chadashim after 3 months. But you got the Tamar, the Yehudali more zantat Tamar kalatecha. They tell Yehuda that Kali, your daughter-in-law, was Mizanah because she's pregnant, because it was apparently apparent to everybody. So the Gemara says, "V'yoleda tisha ubara nikar l'shlisha meha, b'zu ho b'lo hukar ubara l'shlisha meha." This woman, the ubar wasn't nikar after 3 months, because if it was nikar after 3 months, then we would know whose child it was. So itrele ruba. So there's a reyesa, an impairment in the robe. In other words, in Akinami, all things being equal, we would say most women give birth to 9 months. And then all things would say that this child is a child of Reuven and it's 9 months. But all things aren't equal because in this case, she didn't look apparently pregnant after 3 months, after the death of Reuven. So the Gemara says, so therefore the worm is supak. So that's why we don't know. So the Gemara says, if everyone who gives birth after 9 months, the ubar is recognizable after 3 months, so then we can answer it the other way around. If the 9 month pregnancy, I see the woman is apparently pregnant after 3 months. This woman was not apparently pregnant after 3 months from the death of her husband. Rachel was not apparently pregnant 3 months after the death of Reuven. So that would lead credence to the argument that this offspring is a 7 month, pregnancy by Shimon. So the Gemara says, most women who give birth 9 months, the ubar is nikar after 3 months. This one wasn't clear after 3 months that she was pregnant. In other words, it's not conclusive one way or another. There are some women who the pregnancy, right, is not so clear. So there is a rov, the most women give birth to 9 months, but a miut gives birth to 7 months. So here, even though the rov is 9 months, but there's a reyes, all things being equal, we would follow the rov, but there's two reyeses in this rov, or one reyes in the rov, and the reyes in the rov is that it wasn't hukar vlada, the fetus wasn't nikar after 3 months. So we're not sure. So it's the Safek. So in that case, we don't know who the father is. Okay, what's up, Fern? Let me hear you.
Yeah, I would think that even though it's not the 21st century back then, that you can determine from looking at a 7-month fetus or a 9-month fetus that there is prematurity involved or there's full-term birth. I mean, it's a difference of 2 months, not a difference of 2 weeks. Yeah, different parts of the anatomy are just not developed that much. That's so clear today. I would think it would be somewhat clear.
Even the way you're saying, it doesn't mean like like, can't you have a 9-month pregnancy where the child comes out small and it looks like not really fully developed, or a 7-month pregnancy maybe comes out fully developed? In other words, it's not conclusive.
That would not be the Rove of those cases.
You're right. I'm saying the stance. So that's the case. That's what we're Masupaka. It's just saying the same thing, sort of. Most women give 9, some give 7. So we have a Rove, but there's a Reus in the Rove because it wasn't Nikar, but you're just like flipping it over and saying, like, can't you look at the Vlad? But the Vlad, you know, there's a majority with the Vlad in one way or another way, and there's still, you know,
I think it's much more apparent in the Vlad than the appearance of a pregnant woman.
All right.
Cartilage and ears doesn't develop until 30-something weeks, and it's...
All right. So he clearly has to give her a get, right? He has to give her a get, right? Well, don't remember, this was Machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, but he's got to give her a get. Okay. What's Rafi has a question, which I'll repeat. Go ahead. Right. In other words, which halach are you referring to? I mean, Yibam is just, it doesn't, he doesn't, he has intimate relations with her. If the dead brother had any issue, right, then there's any child, there's no Yibam and no Chalitza. Okay, let's see further in the Gemara. Okay, so so Rafi was just asking if Reuven has any child, male or female, is there Yibam? So any offspring not, okay? So now, going on to the Gemara, Laman Zayinam Al, the first word is Tan Rabbanan. So Tan Rabbanan, now, let's say again, so Rachel and Shimon are like, have this, you know, sort of tarred or, you know, hot relationship. And, you know, they're very interested. So even though he violates halacha, he's with Rachel. And then he continues to violate halacha. He doesn't divorce Rachel. He should divorce Rachel, but he doesn't. And then he has another child with Rachel. So Tan Rabbanan, Rishon Ruilio Kohen Gadol. So the Brisa says the first offspring, if the father's a Kohen, he'd even be a Kohen Gadol. And as we don't know who the father is, but either way, he's a Kasher child. So he could be, in other words, Shimon and Rachel, the first child. So the first child is either Reuben's child, the Reuben or Shimon's child. So either way, though, it's a Kasher child. The Shani Mamzer Misafek. The second child is going to be a Safek Mamzer because he might be. It might be the first child might be Reuven's, in which case Shimon is not allowed to be with Rachel, and then Shimon continues to be with Rachel, who was his brother's wife, and then the second child would be a mamzer. That's one scenario. Or both might be Shimon's children, in which case he would not be a mamzer. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Amir, and we're going to explain the Brice, and we have to be patient because we don't understand it. We must be patient. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Amir, in Mamzer Misafik. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov says there's no Mamzer Misafik. So my commerce, what is Reb Lezer ben Yaakov saying, the Gemara asks? Amar Abayi Hachi Kamar Abayi. He says this is what the Braisa means. Now we're going to have two interpretations of the Braisa, Abayi Varava, and they're each going to be sort of diametrically opposed one from another. So Rishon Ruilio Kohen Gadol, the first child is Rui to be a Kohen, this is a Tanakama. The first child is Rui to be a Kohen Gadol, so far so good. B'sheni safek mamzer v'yesher mamzer. The second one is a safek mamzer. In other words, he might be a mamzer, he might not be a mamzer. So here, the Tanakama, the way you buy in since the Braisa, the Tanakama holds a safek mamzer is asur to come to kahal. Right? He can't come to the regular brother Jew, but the safek mamzer can't marry 100% mamzer, a person who knows with certainty he's a mamzer. And even another safek mamzer he can't marry. We'll see. He says, Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Amer, Eino Safik Mamzer, Elabadai Mamzer, Mutar Mamzer. According to this, Reb Lezer ben Yaakov says, there's no din of the Safik Mamzer. Even if he's a Safik Mamzer, he's allowed to marry a full-fledged 100% Mamzeret. Because, in other words, the Torah just says, Lo Yavo Mamzer Bekal Hashem. The Mamzer can't join the Kal Hashem, the regular Kahal, but a Mamzer could have relations with a Safik Mamzer. That's the way he's learning. Okay? Now, that's one shot in the Braisa. So, Rava Amar Hach, so according to this shot that we just said, the Tanakama is Machmir, and Reb Lezer ben Yaakov is Makvil, right? In other words, the case is the Safek Mamzer. The Tanakhama learns the Safek Mamzer is caught between a rock and a hard place. That's the second offspring. And Reb Elezer ben Yaakov, according to Abaye, learns that there's no din of a Safek Mamzer. In other words, Safek Mamzer, you get the same din as a Mamzer, and you can go to like a, you know, and marry another Mamzer. Rav Amar, Haki Kamar. Rav says, cut the price is 100%, 180%, 180 degrees the opposite. Rav Amar, Haki Kamar. Rishon Ruilio Kohen Gadol, that they all agree. The first child could be a Kohen Gadol. B'sheni Mamzer Vadai Misafek Mutar Mamzeret. So in this version, Rabba's version, the Tanakhama is more Mekil. So the Tanakhama says there's no din of a Safek Mamzer, and the Safek Mamzer can marry Mamzeret. Reb Elezer ben Yaakov Amar Ein Vadai Mamzer Misafek El Safek Mamzer Vasur Mamzeret. Point of Reb Elezer ben Yaakov, you don't say that he gets a din of a Vadai Mamzer, he's a Safek Mamzer, he's Asur Mamzeret. So boiling this down to the simplest element, we have Machlok Pin Tanakhama and Reb Elezer ben Yaakov about the second offspring. The second offspring is the Safek Mamzer. What halacha pertains to him? So according to Abaye, the Tanakhama is Mathmir and Reb Elezer ben Yaakov is Mekil, that the Safek Mamzer can marry Mamzeret. According to Rava, the Tanakhama is Mekil and Reb Elezer ben Yaakov is Mathmir. Okay, and they each type that in the words of the Braisa. Now, let's just do a few more lines, then we will pause, and we'll see questions. The Kamiflagi with Reb Elazar. So the point of dispute between Abaye and Rava turns on whether each one holds from a halakhic statement by the Tana Reb Elazar. It's not, because we learned the Mishnah Masechet Kiddushin, so, you know, we're at the beginning of Seder Nashim now. So Seder Nashim begins with Masechet Yevamot, and it ends with Kiddushin. It's like the two bookends are Yevamot and Kiddushin. And the last parak in Kiddushin is Asra Yuchsin, that there are 10 social castes in Klal Yisrael, so social groupings. So now we learn the Mishnah Masechet Kiddushin, Reb Elazar Omer. Again, there's an Amora Reb Elazar and a Tana Reb Elazar. So Tana Reb Elazar is Reb Elazar ben Shemua, and the Amora is Reb Elazar ben Pedat. So he says, Dadan, Reb Elazar Omer, Vada'an v'Vada'an Mutar, that the Vada'i Mamzer with another Vada'i Mamzer, it's a good Shidduch, Vada'an v'Sveikana, Sveikana Vada'an, Sveikana Sveikana Sur. But a Vada'i and a Safek, Safek and a Vada'i is no good, and even a Safek with a Safek is good, because a Safek with a Safek, one Safek might be end up being a Mamzer, and one Safek might be not being a Mamzer, so that's prohibited. Ve'eluhain Sveikan, and which of the cases of Safek with the moms there? Shtuki is when the child asks who his father is and the mother silences him because we don't know who the father is. But a Sufi, a foundling, a child found in the street, we don't know who either parent is. But Kuti, the Kutim, as we know, we've discussed many times before, these non-Jews who the king of Ashur brought to Israel, and then they did sort of a conversion because they were afraid the lions were attacking them. So they don't hold from Torah Shabbat Peh. So as a result of that, they don't hold, because I'll teach us in the beginning of Masechet Kiddushin, Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron, that we learn Kiddushei Kesef and Kiddushei Shtar with Gzeir Shava. So they don't hold from those levels. So if a woman, or a man is Makadish, a woman with Kesef or with Shtar, they don't hold that she's married and would permit her to marry somebody else. So the Kutim are filled with Mamzerim, but each one's a Safek Mamzer. Okay, but Amar of Yudam Arav, Rav Yehuda says in the Rav, halacha for Reb Elazar. Reb Elazar is machmir, and Rav says halacha palos is on Reb Elazar. So now, Rav Yehuda says, can read to come in Shmuel. So we know that Rav Yehuda studied by Rav, and then when Rav died, he went to study by Shmuel. We learned earlier in the thing in this Masechta, we learned that in between, I think there was Rav Asi he studied with also. So anyway, can read to come in to Shmuel, Amarli. Hillel Shanas or Yuchsin Alumi Babel, Tana the Via Yisraeli Talali Gere Chaburi Mamzer and Tinish Stuke Vesupe, Kunla Turn Lavo Zebazet. That Hillel taught that there were 10 Yuchsin, 10 social groups that came from Babel to Israel in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. And the 10 groups are Kohenim Levim Yisraelim. And then Chalale is a Chalal, is a Kohen, you know, let's say his father. Right, his father married a Grusha, so the offspring would be a Halal. Gere is a convert. Karure is an Eved who's been freed. Mamzeri, we know those are Mamzerim. The Tine are the Givonim, who converted to Judaism. They're a Asur to come to Kal and lead Rabbanan. Shtuki, which we did before, now, when he says that they all can join with one another, it doesn't mean literally that all 10 can join one with another. It means there are different groups within the Mishnah. But at the end of the day, it comes out that beginning with Gerei, where it says Gerei. So the Gerim, the last six, can all intermarry with one another. In other words, it means that ones that are adjacent to one another can intermarry. So Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim can intermarry with one another. And then Levim, Yisraelim, and Chalalim, and Gerim, I think, can also intermarry with one another. But anyway, the last six, Gerei, Charurim, Amzerim, Tinei, Shtuki, Vasupe, those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 can all intermarry with one another. Now, within that group is Vadai Mamzer and Safik Mamzer. That's what Hillel taught. So, Va'ad Amar, Halachik Reb Lazar, you say the halach is like Reb Lazar, Hillel says not this way. So, Abai Savar Lo Tishmuel, Damar Halach Hillel. So, Abai is an Amara. He holds from Hillel. Hillel said the halacha that a Safik Mamzer can marry a Mamzer. Muki La Reb Lazar, Reb Lazar Ben Yaakov, will leave you the Hilkata. Now, Gemara learns that Mishnah, Reb Lazar ben Yaakov, Kav ben Aki. The Mishnah, the teachings of Reb Lazar ben Yaakov are Kav, means they're few, but they're not key. They're very clean. In other words, they're good quality. So Abaye wants Reb Lazar ben Yaakov, Reb Lazar ben Yaakov is going to be a Levi to Hilchata. So he interprets Reb Lazar ben Yaakov in the way that Abaye understands the halacha to be. So Abaye understands the halacha that Safik Mamzer and Mamzer can intermarry with one another. So as a result of that, he's going to interpret the brisa that Reb Lezer ben Yaakov says that that's the opinion, that he permits you, the leading opinion. He says, Rava Savar Lak Rav. Rava holds like Rav, the Amar Halakha Reb Lazar. Rav held Halakha like Reb Lazar. The Safik is not allowed to marry with the Badai. Mukila the Reb Lezer ben Yaakov, a leader of the Hilchata. He, in his interpretation of the brisa, wants also Reb Lezer ben Yaakov to be a leader of the Hilchata. So he interprets Reb Lezer ben Yaakov as more machmir shita. He hate lo tikre hilchata hilchata. So there shouldn't be a contradiction with halakot and other halakot. Okay, so the basic idea is we had a machloket in a brisa between the Tanakam and Reb Lezer ben Yaakov, but it was somewhat ambiguous. But one opinion holds that the Safik Mamzer can have relations with the Mamzer, and one holds it can't. So the Tanakam holds one way and Reb Lezer ben Yaakov holds the other way. So Abaye learned that Reb Lezer ben Yaakov has a lenient opinion, and Rava holds that Reb Lezer ben Yaakov is a stringent opinion. But each one, it's taluiva with how each one holds the halacha to be. So Abaye holds that the halacha is indeed that a Safik Mamzer is allowed to have relations with the Mamzer. He's going to interpret Reb Lezer ben Yaakov that way, and Rava, who holds the other way, interprets Reb Lezer ben Yaakov the other way. All right, who's got questions? Go ahead, Fern. What's up?
On the coup team, you said because they don't hold or they by certain kedushin,
by Torah,
right? Then you have safek mamzeris there. Why is it not vadai mamzeris?
No, if you would know the case that a woman accepted kedushin and got married to somebody else, then that would be vadai mamzeris. But it means they as a community. This is the way they regulate their community. The women have kiddushin, it's nothing, and somebody else can marry them. So over the decades and centuries, they got, you know, mamzer. We don't know who's mamzer and who not. So everybody's a Safik mamzer there. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? Okay, let's move on. Okay, so we're on Laman Zion with Bays, the top line. Okay, so Amar Abaye Mina Amin Allah. So now Abaye tries to bring proof. How can I corroborate, you know, my opinion that Reb Lezer ben Yaakov holds that a Safek Mamzer is allowed to marry a Vadai Mamzer? To Tanya, because we learn in the Braisa, Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Harei Shabal Nashim Harbei, if a man has a very prolific life and he has relations with lots of women, he doesn't even know which woman he's had some relations with, so many women he doesn't know who he's had relations with. The woman also, very loose sexual relationship. She doesn't know who impregnated her here, there, the other place. He doesn't know who he impregnated. It says, Nimsa Abno Sepito. So it comes out that a father can end up marrying his daughter, because in other words, they have offspring. Nobody knows who, what's going on, who's the daughter. A brother can marry his sister. And the whole world is filled with mamzerim. So here, he doesn't say, in other words, it's safik. In other words, people are getting married. It's not vadai the mamzerim, it's safik mamzerim. He said, but he calls it mamzerim. So the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov describes this scenario, which, sadly enough, sounds very timely today, but he calls it, the whole world is filled with mamzerim, but they're not filled with badai mamzerim, they're filled with, because nobody knows who's who and what's what. So what that seems to indicate that he equates the din of a safik mamzer with a mamzer. That's the way we think. So he says, so if you look at Rashi, the second and third wide line, misafek karuluhu mamzerim. In other words, at a safik, we call them mamzerim. So the implication is the safik could have relations with the badai. He says, and then the pasuk says, Barava amarla. Now Rava, he holds that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is stringent and doesn't permit the safek to marry the vadai. So how does he interpret that price of Rava amarla haki gamar zu mahi? When he says malaha arat zima, it means that they'll all be sveko, not that I'm calling the safek the same as a vadai. In other words, he's saying malaha arat zima, the word zima, which means like illicit sex, is an acronym for zumahi. In other words, the word zima, zayin mem hey, zumahi, what is this? I don't know what it is. So he doesn't call the safek a vadai. He's saying the world will be filled with safek mamzevers. Okay, now, then the Gemara goes, yetra al kena mar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, above and beyond what we said above, which is that if you know you're having this like loose life, you're going to be filled with whole sveiko. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, lo yisadam isha medina zu, bilech yisa isha medina acheret. A man shouldn't have one wife, let's say in France, then go marry another wife in Eretz Yisrael. He says, Shem is the guzel is there, because maybe these kids will meet one day. He says, v'nimsa achno seir akoto. And a sister will marry, a brother will marry his sister. So the Gemara says, ini, this is true. So this is where the person isn't doing anything illicit, because al pitori lata more than one wife. But notwithstanding that, you have to be careful. So is this true? Ini baharav ki itla the Dardashir makris v'amar manhav yiliyomam. When Rav would travel to Dardashir, which is a city, he would announce, "Who wants to be my wife for the day?" We'll explain in a minute. Rav Nachman ki itla the Sheikh Hansiv. When Rav Nachman would go to the city of Sheikh Hansiv, makris v'amar manhav yiliyomam. Who wants to be my wife for the day? So if you look, Rashi says in the first narrow line, "Man habi liyomi mi chafet sali naseli amim shetakev kan." In other words, I'm here. I'm away from my wife. I need some companionship, and it might be intimacy. So I want to marry somebody. So who's willing to be my wife for, let's say, a week or 10 days, and then I'll divorce you? Who is willing to do that? But we just said that you shouldn't have one wife in one place, another wife in another place, left the wife back in the other place. And then we see these gedolei Torah doing that. So the Gemara says, Shani Rabbanan D'Kiy Shemai. So the Chachamim are different because they're so famous. So everybody will know that this was Rav's son, Rav's daughter. So it's not likely that there'll be a problem with that. Just 1 minute, and we'll finish, and then we'll pause, okay? So Baha'ama Rava, but Rava says, how could they marry a woman like that? Baha'ama Rava, Tiva Ulina say, that at Paisa, Tzrich L'Shev Shivanakim. If a woman was a suitor, importuned a woman to marry him, and she agreed to that, she has to observe Shiva Nakim, meaning there's a presumption at law of Dam Chimud. And the Dam Chimud is that a woman menstruates out of like desire for the husband. So there's a presumption at law that's the way it is. So if that's the case, how could Rav or Rav Nachman go to a place, who wants to be my wife for the day, the week, whatever? But once the woman agrees, she'd be tmeya for at least 7 days, because we'd assume that she had dam chimud, and then only then be tower. But he just wants to, maybe he's there for a day or two. So how does that work? So the Gemara says, Rabbanan shluchai will have mashad remoted. The Gemara says that Chachamim would send ahead a shliach and tell him, who wants to be Rav's wife for a day, a week, whatever. And then she would agree. And then that would be, let's say, a month ahead of time. He's going to be here in a month. And then she'd clear herself up. Or else I could say, that the Chachamim didn't actually have relations with these women, they would just be miyached with them. They would just be alone with them. The Amar Mar, because we have a statement in the Gemara, you know, Doma Mishesh lo Papasalo, Mishesh lo Papasalo. You can't compare somebody who has Papasalo, his bread in his basket, to somebody who doesn't have bread in his basket. And it's a mashal. It means like, if I have bread in my basket, I'm not so hungry. In other words, if I know I can have the bread and eat it whenever I want, it's very apropos for this time of the year, or matzah in the basket. tomorrow night is B'tika Leil, B'tika Schametz. So here they just wanted, in other words, they're away from their wives. They don't want to have, you know, hear hurim. So they said that that's the way it goes. So, you know, as I'm saying this over to you, I'm just kind of wondering about something, but I'll come back. So Tana taught a brisa, Reb Lezim Yaakov Omer, Lo Yisadam Ishto V'Dato L'Garsha, that a person shouldn't marry a woman with intent to divorce her. Now, the way the Meiri explains it is, and they quoted this in the Art Scroll, that it means if I don't notify her ahead of time. Here the Chachamim tell the women, you know, it's a day, a week, whatever, and then it's going to be divorced. But I shouldn't marry a woman and I'm thinking in my brains I'm going to divorce her like 6 months or a year or whatever it is. He says, "Mishum shenemar al tacharoshet rea al reecha ro'ah who yushiv betachitah." Who is like, don't plot evil to your friend, and your friend is like sitting in security with you. In other words, it's very deceitful to do it that way, and a person shouldn't conduct himself that way. Okay, now 1 minute. We're going to have questions in just 1 minute. Let me just do a little piece, and then we'll do some questions. Okay, now, so he goes through the Gemara. Now, the Rambam, as explained by the Beis Yosef, understands that Rav was not concerned with the Rav Yaakov's halacha because he would notify his prospective bride of his intent to divorce her when he leaves the city. So the Rambam is explaining like the Meiri. In other words, like, how come the Chachamim were marrying these women and then they're going to divorce them? We just had the statement here that Rav Lezman Yaakov says you shouldn't do that. But the Rambam and the Meiri both say that they would tell them. Rama holds that it's forbidden to marry with the intent to divorce only if he deceives his wife and does not inform her of his plans. However, with the wife's consent, it is permitted to marry for just a short time with the intent to divorce. The Marshal, citing the Ravid, disagrees and maintains it's forbidden to marry with the intent to divorce even if his wife is informed of his plans. So the Marshal says, no, even if I tell the wife, you're not allowed to do that. The Marshal understands that the Gemara's conclusion is that Rav did not actually marry a woman from Dardashir when he traveled there. Rather, he merely designated a woman as a potential wife. So, in other words, so he didn't actually even marry her, is what he's saying. He's just like, you know, if I need a wife, you're going to be the wife. He says, in the event that he would decide to marry her, Rav would take his new wife back to his hometown. However, this was generally not necessary because merely designating wife was sufficient to subdue his Yitzhara, and he generally did not end up marrying her. So that's a different way to understand the sugya. Now, the Dibros Moshe, that's where Moshe Feinstein has a safer, you know, on like Igros Moshe is the Shas and Shuvas, and Dibros Moshe on different Masechtot and Shas. Dibros Moshe. So the Dibros Moshe cites the Gemara on Chavav in support of the Marashal, the early Nar Masechta. The Gemara, as understood by Rashi and Muki Yosef, indicates that it's forbidden to marry a woman after she was divorced twice. In other words, a woman is divorced twice, poison. Just as forbidden to marry a woman who is twice the widow, Katlanit. In other words, so I can't marry Katlanet, a woman whose two prior husbands died. I should marry a woman who was twice divorced. Now, this requires an explanation for where is marrying Katlanet is forbidden because since it's dangerous to one's health. In other words, I shouldn't do that. He says, what can be wrong in a divorce-prone woman? In other words, if I know she's been divorced twice, and we both know she's been divorced twice, so no harm, no foul. And I'm taking her with, you know, full knowledge of that. So what's the problem? So Ramosha suggests that marrying a divorce-prone woman is forbidden due to Reb Lezman Yaakov's halacha, but is tantamount to marrying a woman with the intent to divorce. This is an assumption that a marriage with such a woman will end in divorce. So in other words, Ramosha's understanding, even if everybody knows it's going to end with divorce, I'm not allowed to do that. So I can't marry the divorcee because I can't enter a marriage with intent to divorce. He says, according to the Rambam, one can marry a divorce-prone woman with the precondition that he will stay married only as long as there is harmony at the home. However, according to the Marshal, the entering, in other words, the Rambam says it was just like misleading the woman. So if I say to the woman, I'll marry you number three, but as long as things are quiet, things are not quiet, then you've been through this route before. But however, according to Marshal, entering into a marriage which is destined for divorce is forbidden, even if the woman is aware of the situation and is not being deceived in any way. So that's the whole piece with that. But I tell you, it makes a lot of sense. Just in general. I used to work for a judge years ago. I remember him saying, you know, that, like, you shouldn't enter into a marriage like with your mind on divorce. You know, who's got questions? Comes to, wait. Yeah, all right. So first, Yosef, and then we'll see what other questions. Go ahead. I have to speak to your local competent Orthodox rabbi about that. In other words, Ramosha is explaining the sugya. Ramosha, he's saying this. He's saying it sounds. Ramosha is saying that the earlier sugya, there's clearly a machloket rishonim about this. Machloket rishonim. If I tell the wife, that I'm going to divorce you, can I marry her or not? This is machloket rishonim. Ramosha is saying that there's a raya from our Gemara to the second side. But as to what even Ramosh is paskening, I don't know. And each situation, I would speak to your local competent Orthodox rabbi. Okay, go ahead. Who has got other questions? Ruth, let's hear from you, Ruth. I can't hear you. You got to unmute yourself.
You're muted.
Here, let me
You're
help
still
you.
Muted.
All right, we're going to help her.
Is it safe? I'm not muted now. You hear me, right?
I hear you. Let's hear it.
Is it safe to say that there was a kind of a promiscuity in those times that kind of allowed?
What leads you to say that?
The earlier part of what we just talked about.
You mean the earlier Gemara about Reb Lezer and Yaakov?
No. Where you were prior to it just now. Going back.
That description doesn't help me. But okay. I assume you mean the Brisa on the third line. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov says, if a man has relations with many women, he doesn't know who he had relations with. A woman has relations with many men, doesn't know who they have. And so then, is that the Gemara you're referring to?
No. Going forward, he's about to go out of town. And
All right. So with the Chachamim, who go to different towns and say that who wants to be the wife for the day. So right. Why is that promiscuity? They're going to marry the women.
You tell me. I mean,
you're the one asking the question. I don't have any problems with you.
It's the spirit of inquiry. It's the spirit of openness that these possibilities exist and existed.
In other words, the Torah permits a man to have more than one wife.
True.
So what's promiscuity? He says he wants to be married. We learned actually, according to one shot, they wouldn't actually marry the women. But even if they marry them, and then we learned another shot that they marry them, and they're not intimate with them. But even if they do everything, it's just so I'm notified that we're getting married. We have Adam and we have a chuppah. So what's the problem? Okay, go ahead.
What is the tzara back home?
Okay, well, one second. That's what I was talking. Go ahead. Which case are you talking about now? Right. What if she's not supposed to do it 2 weeks later? What do you mean? Does it? It's not the same. No, in other words, once she's married to a man, after she's divorced, she has to wait 3 months. Okay, all right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? Okay. Now, one thing I was bothered with, though, I must say, was the Gemara said that about the Dam Chimud. You know, the Dam Chimud, it comes up in Halacha. They say that I think they said that when the Tanayim are signed, the woman shouldn't know about it. In other words, when you're at a chasana, so they do the tanayim, and that the bride doesn't know when the tanayim are signed because we're afraid for dam chimud. That's when she's like committing herself to the marriage. I think there's Chamude Daniel is the name of the sefer. I think he brings it down as one of the nosei kelim shulchan aruch. But there's something else that bothered me, and that was they said that. They propositioned her and she agreed to be married. So we have to be, at that point, she has to be kosher to dam chimud. Then the Gemara says, but they're just being miyached with her. But the thing is, if you, at least al pi halacha, if you have a chupas nida, you can't be miyached with her. It's that part I didn't understand so clearly. Like, how is it Yehudi Ba'almahu? In other words, how does that answer the question? Because you can't be alone with a woman who's Anita. All right. No. In other words, not maybe she's married before. In other words, any woman. In other words, if let's say a person is getting married and then the wife becomes Anita, right before the chuppah or the night of the chuppah, So notwithstanding the fact that they're both married, they can't be alone together. They have to be separately from one another. They have to fill this whole thing. So, but here, the Gemara seems to say, unless it's a different din for this Dam Chima. Okay, I can go further in the Gemara, and then we have to go up. Okay, so now, we're two lines above where it gets wide on Lam Zayin Amud Beis. Now, the Gemara has a series of halakhot. So listen to carefully to each case, and then we'll focus on questions. Okay, so Safik B'Yavim Shabal Lachlok B'Nichsei Mitna. Now, we said that if Shimon didn't wait the 3 months, and then Rachel gives birth, we don't know whether the offspring is Reuven's son or Shimon's son. If he's Reuven's son, let's say Reuven had $100 million, and Shimon has $100. So if he's Reuven's son, he's an heir to $100 million. If he's Shimon's son, he's got nothing. So he says, Safik b'yavim shabal lachok b'nechsei mitna. The Safik and the Avam are dividing the estate of the dead one, that's Reuven. Safik Amar and Arba Menahu. The Safik says, I'm the son of the deceased, of Reuven, who is my best interest. In other words, or we make this argument on his behalf, that, you know, he maintains his father's Reuven. And so all the property is mine. He says, V'yavim Amar, the Avam says, no, you're my son. You have no right to the property. I'm the one who gets into all the property, because as far as I'm concerned, you're my son. Shimon says that. So the Gemara says, Havei mamon umutav asafek. Now, in this case, normally we say, amotzi mechaver olav araya. If one person is buksak, one person's in possession of the money, so then we say that the plaintiff has the burden of proof. But here, nobody is more muksak than the other one on the property. So this is mamon umutav basafek. The money is basafek. Mamon umutav basafek kolkin. Mamon umutav basafek is kolkin. So it means, in this case, they'll divide the estate 50-50. And the son. Okay? Everybody good with the first halacha? Correct. Okay, now, next case. Okay, next case. Safek uvenayavam shvalachlok benichse mitna. Now, here, after Reuven dies, and then Rachel bears a child, Shimon also dies. So at this point, we have the Safek, we have the offspring who's not sure if his father's Reuven or Shimon, and Bnei Yavim, and then we have this, Shimon has other sons. So they're coming Lachlok B'nechse Mitna. They're trying to divide up the $100 million estate from Reuven. Safek Amar, Hu Gavra Bar Minahu B'nechse Didihu. So Safek says, I'm his heir, that entire estate belongs to me. Bnei Yavim Amri, the sons of the Yavim say, At Achinuat, you're our brother, and you have a share with us. Let's say there are four, Shimon has three other sons, and now with this son will be four sons, assuming nobody's a bechor. So you're entitled to a 25% share of the estate. In other words, the estate passed through from Reuven to Shimon. Shimon's dead, and now we're going to divide up the $100 million estate amongst ourselves, and the $100 that Shimon has. So we each get 25% of the estate. So the Gemara says, Sabu Rabban Kamid Ramasharshi Lamaymar Manitani. So the Chachamim, who were discussing this case before Ramasharshi, thought this case is the equivalent to that which we learned in Mishnah. Now, in this case, we think one has a Tanit Badai, one has a Tanit Safek, that the sons of Shimon, Bnei Yavam, they have a Tanit Safek. In other words, they claim that the Safek is really their brother. So it's a Tanit Safek. They can't prove it one way or another way. But the Safek, in quotation marks, is really making a Tanit Badai. How? Because in the alternative, either he's the son of the Reuven, in which case he gets the whole estate, or he's the son of Shimon, in which case he's part of the estate. So his Taina, he's definitely entitled to a share of the estate. In other words, his Taina, without a doubt, he's entitled to a share of the estate. With the other ones, it's a question of whether they're entitled to any share of the estate. So they argued, let's see back in the Gemara, they thought that's the same case as in the Mishnah. This is on the fifth wide line. If none, this is the Mishnah later on, Daf Kuf. This is talking about a case where Hu Eino Yoresho Tam, Bein Yorshim Oto. This is where, not our case, but you have, you know, a man, you know, was, you have, you know, you have husband A and then husband A dies or divorces his wife, and husband B marries her within 3 months and has a child. And then he's got other children from, you know, from before or whatever. So the Mishnah says, "Huinu yorshatam." The one who's the safek can't yarshin any of his vaday brothers. In other words, father A had children, and this safek, we don't know if he's the son of A or the son of B. So he doesn't yarshin any of his siblings from A. He doesn't yarshin any of his siblings from B, because each one says, you know, when he comes to yarshin, they say, you're the son of the other one, the other one. He says, but they yarshin him. He says, v'hacha ipcha. In other words, over there, his taina is a safek. Their taina is a vadai. So the vadai pushes away the safek. Here, it's just the opposite. Hatamam relay, in that case, the sons who are vadai, the sons, say to him, Aiti raya ushko, bring proof that you're really one of our siblings and you'll take a share with us. Hacha amar lahu, here he says, here the safek says to the other, the sons of Yavam, Aiti raya ushko, bring proof that that you're really entitled to a piece of this estate. So in other words, so lechora, that's what the Talmidim thought should be the halacha in this case, because the safek has an ironclad argument that he's entitled to at least portion of the estate. So Amar Lahu Rav Sharshia Midami. So Rav Sharshia said, how are those two cases comparable? Hatam inu vaday v'yu safek. In the case later on in Daf Kuf, so the siblings who are inheriting, you know, one of the siblings died or whatever, they're each yarshning each other. That's definitely a vaday, and he's a safek. Here, it's true, he has a composite of arguments that together equal a vadai argument, but that's not the same as a vadai. In other words, either I'm Reuven's son, in which I'm entitled to the whole estate, or I'm Shimon's son, in which case I'm entitled to part of the estate. It's not really a tanis vadai, it's a tanis safek here, safek there. But that's not the same as a tanis vadai, Rav Sharshia says. So vada is mostly midi safek, but this is not a tanis vadai. So now, just 1 second. So what will Rav Sharshia to say to do? So the Gemara doesn't spell it out, but if you look in Rashi, the Rashi is benichsa yavam kufa, the middle of Rashi, v'nira be'enai, the himanat v'kam odu le'shakil, the part that the other, like the 25% that they agree he's entitled to, he takes, v'ida kabi momon omutam safek v'cholkin. And then the rest, they'll divide up. So he'll get half of the remainder, and the other brothers will get half the remainder. Again, means like this. Reuven had $100 million. Shimon had, let's say, nothing. So Reuven is dead, and then Shimon dies. So the question is, was Shimon, and then there's an offspring here that we don't know if he's Reuven's son or he's Shimon's son. Shimon has three other sons. So the three other sons say, you, the safek, are one of our brothers. So we concede you're entitled to 25% of the estate. And then we're entitled to the other, you know, three quarters divided amongst us. So Rashi says that the safek will get 25% of the estate from off the top. And then with the remainder, 75%, let's say it was $100 million estate. So he gets $25 million. The remaining $75 million, that's the mamon umutab safek. So he's a plaintiff with that as well. He'll divide that in half. So the 75 million, he'll get whatever half of 75 million is.
37.5.
So he'll get another 37.5, and the remaining 37.5 will be divided three ways between the other three sons. Okay, now I'm in the middle of this conversation, so you guys have to keep moving, okay? So he says, so it's a Ella, so I'm up to Ella, okay, on the 10th line. Okay. Ella idamia lamanitin lahadamia. So if there is a case which is similar to the later case in Daf Kuf, we're moving to a different case now. So the case in Daf Kuf is we have a son who's not sure if he's the son of A or B, and other siblings who are definitely A and definitely B, and then some siblings die or siblings die, so they each push them off. It says Ella idamia lamanitin lahadamia. If it's similar to a Mishnah, it's similar to this Mishnah. The safek b'nei yavam shavalach lo b'nechse yavam gufa. The safek and the sons of the Yavam, in which Shimon dies, and now Shimon's got the money, and now they have to divide Shimon's estate. The Hatam Amrile, over there, they'll say to him, "Aiti raya da achuna aru shul." So they'll say to him, "Bring evidence that you are a brother and take it." So that's the comparable case. In other words, that a safek is not a motzi mi dibadai. So there, he's a safek Shimon and he's a safek Ruvain. And there are definitely Rishimon's sons. So they'll push him away. We have a Tanis Vada, you have a Tanis Safek. So you're out of gas. Okay. Now.
So that one had to do with burden of proof.
So the it's if you want to frame it that way, it means that the Tana, the argument of a Vada is stronger than the Tana of a Safek, really. That's what the Gemara wants to say. It's not, I mean, it's not that they're reducing proof from extraneous matters. It's just on the face of it that way. But all right. Now, I'm moving on to the next case. We only have a few minutes, and I want to get through the sugya, and that'll be it. Now, next case. Safek ubnei yavam, shabar ulachlok b'nechse yavam, lebatar depalag yavam b'nechse mitna. Now, Reuven died, and now there was a Safek, and the Safek's interests were opposed to Shimon's interest. The Safek said, "I'm this Reuven's son," and Shimon said, "You're my son." So we learned earlier that they're going to divide the estate. It's Mamon Amutav Safek Holkin. So the Safek gets $50 million, and Shimon gets $50 million. That's water under the bridge. Now Shimon dies. So Bnei Yavam Amri, Aiti Rayada Kuna out of school. So the sons of the ones who are definitely Shimon's sons say to the Safek, "Bring evidence that you're our brother and take it." In other words, you don't have evidence, so get lost. Amar Luhu Safek, the Safek says to the sons of Shimon, "Mana Shaihu, I'll plead in the alternative. Yechukonana, if I'm your brother, Habakumanata Badaihu. So let me have a portion with you." In other words, if there are three other brothers, I'm the fourth one. Someone taught us 25% of the estate of Shimon. And Shimon got $50 million from Reuven. He says, in other words, Reuven had $100 million. Shimon took $50 million, and the Safek took $50 million. Now Shimon dies. So now, where does the $50 million go? That's in my example. And Shimon could have other assets as well. So the other sons of Shimon say, "Get lost. You're a Safek. We're a Badai. We're taking all the $50 million." So he says, "Look, I'll plead in the alternative. If I'm one of your brothers, so give me a share of the estate." He says, "V'ibar mitnana," and in the alternative, if I'm the son of Reuven, so which is what you claim now, that I'm Reuven, so I get lost, so give me the $50 million that your father took. If you say I'm not your brother, that means I'm Reuven's son, so let me have the $50 million. So Rabbi Abba Amarav Kamdina. Rabbi Abba says to Rav, the previous litigation is water under the bridge. It's like res judicata is what we would say. So we're going to begin from scratch now. And Mila, they have a Tanis Vada. He's got a Tanis Safek. He's out the door. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar Hadardina. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, no, we can undo the previous din. But Mila, he's either going to get, those are the choices. He gets either the $50 million that Shimon got, or they give him a share with them. Those are the choices. Okay, so that's the halacha. Now, we're going to connect this, hopefully, to another machloket, depending on our time. I don't know if I'm going to get through it. So, Lema, but plugged into Adam of Rabbanon Kemiflagi. Should we say that Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yirmiyah, who have a machloket, whether Kamdina or Hardadina? Kamdina means it's res judicata. It's been decided we're not reopening the old case. And Hardadina, we're going to reopen the old case and litigate. He says, did not. We learned now that machlok is a machlok of Amorayim. We think the same as machlok of Tanayim. Then later on, there's a mission at the end of Masechet Kubot. Did not. Mishalachim din layam. Reuven takes a trip overseas. Va'abdolo derech sadehu. So his field was landlocked by other fields. So he forgot he had a right, a right of way to his field, but he forgot where that right of way was. Admon Amar, Yelech Biksara. Admon says he should take the shortest path to his field, meaning the least obtrusive path. He says, come and say, look, a Me'aman is like $1 zillion. He's got to pay $10 zillion or fly in the air, meaning he's up a creek. We're not going to do anything for him. Ravina Bas, we were Osek in this Mishnah, and we asked the following question. The Rabbanon say he's out of luck. In other words, he's got his field here. He's surrounded by other parcels. He's got no way to get to his field. So the Chachamim said, tough luck. So he says, Ravina Bas, the Rabbanon, Shapir Kama Amon. The Chachamim, Amon's got a great idea. In other words, he had a path. So we're just saying, we assume that there's one landholder that holds all the land around his field. That's what we assume. So the Admon says, let him take the shortest path. So he says, Va'amar Abyudim Arav, Abyudim Arav, Hachamay Askinan, Don't Shikiku Ar Babin Edam Ar Baruchot, that four different people have four different parcels around that piece of property. So we think right now that each one, there were always four different people. So therefore, each one says, what do you want from me? Go to the other one. Your path wasn't through my property. Go to the other person. So that's why the Chachamim say he's stuck. Yihaki my time at the Admon. So if that's the case, what's Admon's rationale that he takes the shortest path? So he's got one neighbor, but the neighbor says, what are you doing on my property? But I'm a Rava. So Rava says, to explain what Rava is saying before, if the four people now were successors in interest to four other people, and it was always four owners, four separate parcels of property, he says, then there's no machloket. He says, or the four bought it from one prior owner, there's no machloket that they could each shove him away. Everybody agrees he's up a creek in that fashion, because each person could say, it wasn't on my property, go to the other guy. So there's no way for him to succeed. He pligi, the machloket is the chad da'ati mikoach arba, where now there's one property owner that owns all four parcels. He purchased it from four prior owners. So let's say Reuven will be the plaintiff. Reuven took the trip. When Reuven took the trip, there were four prior owners. Now he doesn't know where the right of way was. But now there's only one owner who owns all the properties. So Admon Savar, Matzi Amarle, Mikomakom, Darki, Gabachu. Admon holds, look, at the end of the day, Reuven says, let's say Shimon owns the property around him. He says to Shimon, I don't know where my right of way was, but it's definitely on one of your properties. So give me a right of passage, and I'm going to take the shortest passage. Rabbanan Savri, the Chum hold, the Amarle, that Shimon can say to Reuven, Shatak, Shatak, listen, if you want to be quiet and walk away and not litigate this point, the Elo, otherwise you're going to make a Hakachinik, Mahadrana Star Lamarayu. I'm going to undo the previous deal, give the properties back to the prior owners, and then then you'll have no claim with either one of them. So the Gemara thinks, we think that one is saying that, in other words, there's the first opinion that says that now he has a right, an argument. He holds like Hadar Dina. In other words, in Akhenami, there were four owners before. Now there's one owner. So now there's I got to go. It's late from our. I'm sorry. I got to. Okay. Bye-bye.